by just saying first, Dale, gratitude for his very nice comments about me. Dale and I have been, I think we've been friends for a long time, and I appreciate very much the things he had to say. It was always a joy to work with him when he was with us at Grand White, and I look forward to other opportunities to be with him. Understanding the times. Thomas Paine said in his little pamphlet, Common Sense, these are the times that try men's souls. Charles Dickens begins his novel, Tale of Two Cities, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Somehow that concern with time overwhelms us. We try to evaluate the times we're now in. Are these the best of times? We go to the other extreme. Are these the worst of times? There are always some good folks around who tell us it can be worse. I've been there. And there are a few folks who will say it can't be better. I believe in that. All of us have lived through various periods of time. I lived through World War I. I did not live through the Depression. I look old, but I'm not that old. I lived through World War II. I lived through the Korean conflict. We decided we didn't want to use the word war anymore, so it became a conflict. I lived through the civil rights era. I lived through all kinds of times of rising and falling, and the age of anxiety, all those times. How much I understood each one as I was going through it, I don't know. But at every opportunity, there was always someone there to sort of explain, here's what's really happening. Here's the background for it. When I teach American literature, I talk about certain time periods. We have a Puritan age. We have an age of romanticism. We have an age of realism, an age of naturalism. And I try to explain to my students, how do we get to that point? Did somebody just declare one night, December the 31st of some year, this is the end of romanticism, and tomorrow morning it will be an age of realism? No, that didn't happen. But looking at the things that happened, we begin to say, okay, here's a tendency that begins to move forward, and I can characterize it with a new term. Understanding the times. When the chronicler recorded the numbers in David's army, he broke them down by tribes. And for some of those tribes, he gave a particular characteristic that made those men exceptional. In 1 Chronicles chapter 12, he says concerning Issachar's men, they understood, they had understanding of the times. And that's where we get our title. They had understanding of the times. What does that mean? What does that mean, those fighting men? What's it supposed to mean for you and me? We read it and say, why am I reading that? What am I supposed to get from it? For us, I think it says, number one, we can't live in the past. It's awfully tempting to say, oh, the good old days. You know, the folks who lived in the good old days didn't think they were good or old either. They thought they were pretty contemporary. And they were coping with things that for them were new. It's not just a matter of the good old days. We can't live in the past. Neither should we allow ourselves to scorn and fear what is an unknown future. Don't be afraid of tomorrow. Oh, I know that God says tomorrow will take care of itself. So that's a good reason not to fear it. We must not be swayed by the Pollyannas of our day who tell us, oh, everything's going to be great. Neither should we be moved by the doomsayers who can cry out nothing but destruction. They will deal with some of this. We need to be wise enough to understand the times we're in and to be able to comprehend the impact that they have on others around us. As the years come and go, we often overlook the stages of life that we experience or are experiencing. I have to ask myself occasionally, can I relate to our children? I see them running around at church, and I just have to be careful they don't knock me down, because I don't run. Can I relate to them? I saw one of our little boys the other night. He was sitting at a table reading a book. We were having a meal, and he was all by himself. And I walked over and said, Jacob, what grade are you in? He looked up like, what's he expecting me? He said, what grade are you in? He said, seven. I said, oh, good. like to read?
Yes, sir.
What are you reading now?
He showed me the part of the book.
I said, what's good? You keep reading.
That's right.
Just have some connection with him. Do I understand our young, our children? Do I understand our teens? That becomes the real question. Do I understand our young adults who are going through something that Sherry and I went through 100 years ago? Not the way they have to go through it. Or for that matter, do I understand any of the other people, even our senior members? I'm understanding them better than I ever did before. Secondly, can they relate to me? Am I somebody that offers them something, or is I'm just an old man who can't get out of order? William Shakespeare, and As You Like It, one of his great comedies, has a character say, all the world's a stage. And all the men and women are merely players. One man in his time plays many parts. And then that character goes on to list seven ages of man. As Shakespeare broke those down, he talks about the infant. He says, mewling and puking in his nurse's arms. He talks about the schoolboy, very reluctantly going off to school. Schoolboys haven't changed a lot over the centuries. He talks about the lover and the soldier and the justice, the person who is wise enough now to make some decisions. He talks about what we call the aged. And then finally, he talks about second childhood. And we like to describe that sometimes. Well, do I understand the age where I am? Do I know where I fit in? Do I understand the age where others are? I want to approach this. I want to borrow four of Shakespeare's ages. Not do all seven of them, but four. Number one, how do I understand the times of childhood? These years are marked by innocence. We love to talk about the innocence of children. By dependency. They have to rely on a lot of people who understand what they're doing. It's an age of uncertainty. Every day is new and a little peculiar. It's an age of growth. We hope it is. It's an age of learning. And we want to provide every opportunity for them to do that learning. They are busy times. Children are have an amazing interest and curiosity. One of the young ladies that I worked with told me the other day she'd been recently teaching a class of 2 and 3 year olds. And she said to one little girl, when were you born? The little girl told her the year. And then, as she said, because children have no filter, the little girl said, when were you born? And she said, 1992. Little girl looked up and said, you lived in the 1900s? I know that you don't realize that, but that's pretty astonishing. Some of you had that experience. You lived in the 1900s. Children are trying to grasp what's going on in the world. And some of it just far exceeds their apparent comprehension. But as children experience all of these things, so do young Christians. We need to think about them as a form of childhood, too. They began as children, as newborns, and Peter describes them as that very thing, even with their diet. Peter says newborn babes desire the pure milk of the word that they may grow thereby. 1 Peter 2 and verse 2. Everything that we expose them to should aid in their growth. That's our desire. It is a stage that needs our patience and our understanding and our encouragement. Some are rather tempted to label children as either cute or as noisy or as troublesome. You know, if we can just get the kids out of the way, we'd have church. And then we want to write them off from any special consideration. But they have a right to be there. They need to be there. And we need to be the encouragement. As adults, we're charged with teaching and influencing their growth. In the same way that Paul praised Lois and Eunice for their training of young Timothy. You writes in 2 Timothy 1, "When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded it is in you also." That's where we need to be. We may be the grandparents. We may be the parents. What about those we influence? Parents cannot ignore such a role as parents. Proverbs chapter 1 sets a very high standard for those who have children. "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck." Notice the directive is aimed at both fathers and mothers. We sometimes read Paul's injunctions in Ephesians 6 and Colossians 3 and think mothers get left out. Well, Solomon put them in there fully. Fathers and mothers have a responsibility. Hear the instruction of the father, do not forsake the law of your mother. They will be a graceful ornament. It will be something to admire and honor and respect. And they will be chains about your neck, not holding you in, but ornament, a decoration. Look how fortunate you are to have those children. Notice that directive then to fathers and mothers, prepare the young. Paul even added the grandmother in the list. I'm glad he did. I had a great grandmother. But I would add Bible school teachers, ministers, elders, Christians in general. Just understand what it's like to be a child. With a whole world out there to explore, understand, fathom. It's a challenge to it. What about the stage we call youth? I'm not sure where you draw that dividing line between childhood and youth. But whether we see that line or not, it's there. We understand that at some mystical point, they move out of childhood into the stage of youth. And they don't always understand that change either. And that's where they need our help. It also is a time of learning, even more intense learning. They're having to grow up into a world that children have not yet fathomed. They're learning more than facts. They're learning to deal with emotions, with judgments, perceptions, skills. And sometimes they need some extra guidance. When I taught in high school years ago, I was directing a production of Macbeth. And the song leader said to us one day, after chapel, "Your girl who's playing Lady Macbeth worked on her lines all the way through chapel." He said, "I saw her look down and she looked up and her lips were moving and she looked down." I said, "Well, thank you, I'll talk to her." So I went and found her and I said, "You can't work on your lines in chapel." She said, "I wasn't doing that." I said, "Well, the song leader said," and I explained what he had said to her. She said, "Oh, I was counting the tiles in the seat." I said, "You can't do that in chapel either." They're down here, the next time they're way up here, they come right in between, and we need to have some respect for what's happening there. And we need to remember that Jesus experienced that same growth. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, favor with God and man, Luke 2:52. I don't know what was troublesome for him, but somewhere he was a youth. And that's why Mary and Joseph taught him that he was subject. Youth struggle with their search for identity and independence is well described in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes. But know for all these, God will bring you into judgment." Solomon has captured some very basic qualities of people in their youth. They won't follow their heart. They want the things they see with their eyes. And there's nothing wrong with that except just know. God will still ask you to be accountable for that. If you want to just pursue your heart, be sure your heart's heading in the right direction. If you want the things that your eyes see, be sure In all of that time, don't we need to be available to help them as they encounter those trying and accusing times? After all, we went through them. We survived somehow. Did we learn anything? Or do we just want to blot it out? That's just a period of my life I'd rather not talk about. Every Christian should be a mentor to our youth. And that includes learning their names, learning their school, learning their interests, showing a great appreciation for them. Number three. We get the so-called troublesome ones out of the way. Now let's talk about being adults. When we get to this stage, we decide we've made it now. You remember that? Remember when my dad told me, you just went to be 3 times 7. I didn't know my dad knew math that well, but at any rate, something magical about being 21. There's a kind of threshold there that said, when I turn 21, I'm going to understand a lot of things I never understood before. And most of all, I'm going to finally possess that elusive judgment that my parents kept telling me I needed. Just use good judgment. Well, where do I find it? Where can I buy it? Somehow at age 21, I would have it. It didn't come that magically. It didn't come that quickly either. But we think we've made it. We assume we've attained that elusive judgment and wisdom that puzzled us so much when we were young. And now we discover we're expected to be responsible as adults. We're to be devoid of all foolishness, carelessness, and mistakes. Don't ever make a mistake after you're 21. You can't do that. Well, that's not so. You know that. But it is a period of life when we're without excuse. It is a time in life when we have a great deal more to learn, and we haven't gotten there yet. In the midst of trying to learn how to be adults, we are now faced with learning how to help our own children. The poet Wordsworth rather wisely observed, the child is father of the man. It may be hard to see in that child a budding adult, but that's part of the whole growth. Child grows up to become a man. And it says somewhere in this childhood, I'm trying to make preparation for those years of adulthood. We may not always see the budding adult in that noisy child, even if the child is my own, and we're always rather partial to our own. But Paul expands on that responsibility that I mentioned a moment ago from Ephesians 6 and in Colossians 3. As adults, we are not only leaders in the home. Now we are charged to become leaders in the community. We're expected to know our neighbors, to help with neighborhood moves and acts. We're to be leaders on our job. And we certainly need to become leaders of the church. One of the great needs of adulthood is the ability to think beyond myself. We always talk about children being so self-centered. One of my favorite writers says, every infant is Nero in a bassinet screaming, give me, give me, give me. That's a pretty good description of infants. Well, adults are not supposed to be like that. We're supposed to grow up and take on some responsibility. And one of those responsibilities is to stop focusing on me. And learning to take responsibility for others, just as Barnabas did for Saul of Tarsus. And as he did for John Mark. And just as Aquila and Priscilla did for Apollos. One adult helping another. It is an age of greatest accountability. We're beyond that stage where we can excuse all of our failures with, I forgot. Or, but I didn't want to do that. We sometimes let those slide with children. They do forget. And sometimes their want-tos don't equal our want-tos. But as adults, I can't use those excuses. Nobody pays much attention to me. I said, I didn't want to do it. The boss won't like that. My wife may not like that. I'm an adult. I'm supposed to act like an adult. The Bible warns that in judgment, we will account for both our deeds and our words. So the adult years of a very important age. And I must not try just to glide through it. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of bumps along the way, and I learned how to negotiate. And then that fourth stage, the senior years. Shakespeare described these years as a time without teeth, without taste, without everything. I think Shakespeare was just paralleling Ecclesiastes 12. That list of all those things are gone. Sound of the birds will be low, you don't hear very well, my hair turns white. All those things are a mark of age. As age creeps upon us, we find ourselves coping with numerous losses, some physical, some mental, some social, and some spiritual. But it's also a time of renew. The psalmist assesses his years and says, I've been young, and now I'm old. Psalm 37:25. Somehow we need to have that kind of double vision. I've been young, I remember what it was like. Now I'm old. What does that mean? Do I understand the times? Do I understand what the times were? Do I understand what the times are right now? What have I learned from all my years? What can I share with those who may be approaching my age? Dale mentioned the word octogenarian. I just happened to insert here that my wife and I are octogenarians. And I asked her the other day, do you know what you'll be when you turn 90? And she said, no. And I said, you'll be a nonagenarian then. Well, she didn't like that word. She thinks octogenarian is pretty good. A friend of mine that I told about that wrote back on this email and said, tell her to forget octogenarian. I just tell people I've been 77 for the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, however you want to handle the age thing. Solomon warns about this advice in his own to the young himself. He tells them to remember their days of youth before the evil days come. It's kind of a conclusion. There are going to be evil days out there. You'll have some difficulty. Before the evil days come, and the years draw nigh when you say, I have no pleasure in them. What he describes does indeed parallel Shakespeare's assessment of being without everything. But it doesn't have to be. These years can be maybe times of limited energy, but they don't have to be times of uselessness. And we can all find something to do. Two of the early witnesses of Jesus after his birth, who rejoiced over their experience, were Simeon, who was just waiting to see the consolation of Israel. When he saw Jesus, then he said, now, Lord, let your servant depart in peace. And the other was 84-year-old Anna, who devoted her life to service in the temple. They both characterize the ancient prayer from Psalm 72, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, do not forsake me until I declare your strength to this generation. I cannot die until I've made sure that the generation behind me understands, appreciates, recognizes, and honors God. Do not let me die until I declare your strength to this generation. We have a great deal yet to do. We have responsibilities to fulfill. We need to stay alive and alert. Well, each one of us has already lived through a good many of these ages. We will safely assume we've all passed childhood and youth. We're somewhere in between adult and the aged. Have our ages been those of learning and growth? What have I learned? How have I grown? Am I stronger today than I was 2 years ago? Have I made any kind of spiritual progress? At the same time, I have to reach out to those who are even younger than I am and help them to grow up in the Lord. That's a very important phrase, to grow up in the Lord. God has never excused any of us from that task. It has been my responsibility from the very beginning for those younger than I am. Particularly when our children came along and our grandchildren. I remember asking a faculty member who was older than I was, one day we were having a cup of coffee, and I said, do you ever get to a point where you don't worry about your children? He said, I don't think so. My mother still worries about me. And he was over the high bars. I was looking forward to that time when I don't have to worry about them anymore. They're grown. Let them take care of them. Such a hadn't happened. Not yet. Those of us who are advanced in years must never decide that because we retire from our jobs, we can retire from our Christian responsibilities. There is no retirement in serving the Lord. Neither should we decide that we have nothing to offer the following generations. Because we do. Psalm 90 is assumed to be a Psalm of Moses. This man who lived 120 years, filled with a wealth of experiences, prayed this prayer that could very easily be ours. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Psalm 90, verse 12. As you and I count our years, as we try to understand the times in which we are living, may we continue to devote those years to learning and to sharing